The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat, Slovakia edition. I am not Kyle Klingman. Joined today by the Bucky Dent of Trnava, Andy Hamilton. How's that working for you?
The Bucky Dent of Trnava. Where are you going with that, JB?
I don't know. I was thinking of a Yankees reference and our host city. So,
okay.
The anchor leg, no, the sweeper of Spartak Trnava, you know, the Superliga team here.
You got to check out some kickball.
We checked out a... Let's see, who was it? Here at the Junior World Championships. And before we started, it was Nate Engel, his wife, and myself. We also had, who else went on there? I can't even remember.
Olenowski was
there? Yeah, that's right. Eric Olenowski was with us. So it was four or five of us went down, and Taylor Miller from USA Wrestling. And we checked out a football game on Saturday, just like you should do in America. Only we were in Slovakia, and the football we were checking out was kickball. It was the soccer. It was the beautiful game. So we did see a little bit of that. So I'm not sure where the Bucky Dent reference came. I was just thinking of a Yankee who had a glorious shining moment in his career, like you've had many.
1978.
I wasn't born yet.
That's when I remember Bucky Dent, the home run against the Red Sox, 1978.
Did he have like one career homer and that was it?
I think he had more than that. But
I think the way it was described is the light hitting Bucky Dent.
I'm not real familiar with the intricacies of the Bucky Dent story, but I do appreciate that home run as a Yankee fan.
I'm doing my best Kyle Klingman impression because, again, we're in Trnava. Andy's usually in studio with Kyle doing the show, and we did this unannounced as far as Kyle doesn't know we're even doing this, so I guess we should probably tell him that we're crimping his style and ripping off his – I mean, you're the co-host, so I mean, we're here. We're halfway.
We are, Kyle's always got an interesting way of bringing the show in.
Mm-hmm. And this was not a very interesting way of doing it.
We never rehearse, and we didn't rehearse here.
No, matter of fact, our rehearsal, we used completely different names. That
be revealed later.
Yeah, maintaining your focus.
Which we're not doing a very good job.
No, we're not. Because we're... If you can tell, we're in a hotel room, a Holiday Inn in Trnava, recording this between sessions on day like 50. I mean, been here a week already, but it's day 4 of competition. By the time you hear this, the women's finals will be probably done. But happy morning to you in the United States. It's in the afternoon here. Yeah, so day 4 of Junior Worlds, and you've been all over the world the last couple of years. What are your early returns on Trnava?
It's an interesting community. It's small, quiet. The thing that was really strange to me was Sunday morning about 10 o'clock going around trying to find something to eat for breakfast and nobody on the streets. A few people in restaurants sitting outside, but it's a pretty quiet little community here and it's nice. So I like it. It's interesting. A lot of history here. How about you? What do you think of it?
Very Eastern Europe, if those who've traveled Eastern Europe kind of, if you've been a couple, it's not like you've been to one place, you've seen them all, but there are very, similar aspects of this that, and then Serbia where I've been and other places, some parts of Budapest, I'm making sure to drive that point home, have this kind of look to them, but it's formerly part of Czechoslovakia. You got the Czech Republic, we got Slovakia and yeah, I was looking things up. This is like, they call it Little Rome because of the amount of Roman Catholic churches in this vicinity we're in right now, including the giant central church across the street from our hotel. So, yeah, it's been pretty good. The food, some places is better than others. We've had some good pizza.
A lot of protein.
Yeah, a lot of protein. I've found some local craft beers, which I've enjoyed. I've sampled most of them from this particular place, if not all of them, and... Yeah, the facility, it may look a little dated from the outside, but inside It's small, it's compact, it's loud, it's hot. As they actually brought in like an extra air tube to shoot cool air into the venue. But, you know, I've definitely been places that are not as nice as this.
Same. It's not bad. It's, I think you described the venue well. It's an intimate venue that seems to work all right for this kind of tournament. And the crowds have been all right.
Vocal.
Yeah. They've been into it.
You don't need a crowd of 30 people will definitely, you know, get people rolling. Like the Iranians, one of the days were loud, and almost every time you wrestle a Russian, you'll hear, if they're wearing blue, it's a red passive, and you look up, and it's like 10 seconds into the bout. It's like what's he doing on top guy in college wrestling after the guy gets a takedown. That's like what it is when you're wrestling the Russians.
Indeed.
Gets a takedown. What's he doing on top? Yeah, that's like blue passive. It's like, dude, the match just started.
Yeah, they're begging.
Competition-wise, we've seen Andrew Berryessa make the world finals kind of coming out of nowhere. Tim Hands might cringe when you hear him say that, but, you know, from a Greco-Roman standpoint, he had no international credentials, where a lot of these guys are at least continental medalists and things of that nature. He makes the finals. Kamal-based, fifth-place performance, a little disappointing when you look at him and how many points he scored last year. And then, you know, Colton Schultz, 17-year-old, he's not even 18 yet, and wrestling out there against, like, I want to say full-size juniors, and I mean that age-wise, I guess, because they're every bit of the age limit, especially the Armenian. But
Yeah, and then he faced the Croatian in the bronze medal match, and the guy's got an 8-pack.
Yeah, and not talking like, you know, of 8-pack of pounders. The guy was chiseled. Yikes.
Yeah, he was absolutely sculpted. Incredible performance by Colton Schultz. When you think of transitioning from a cadet world champion last year at 16 to the junior level, and it's remarkable just the difference in him physically over the course of a year. He told me the other night that he put on roughly 20 kilos from what he weighed in for this tournament a year ago.
Yeah, because he was a cadet wrestling at the juniors last year. And was actually winning that match and then lost late, and that was his tournament.
Yep. And so he comes here and bigger, stronger, just started getting into weight training seriously, I think. And I think we're going to even see a different-looking Colton Schultz a year from now as well. So I think if you're a fan of the United States Greco program, you've got to be pretty excited about him. And I think there are some pieces starting to come together. Maybe for the program a little bit. When you look at him, you look at didn't turn out the way that you had hoped for Kamal Bey, but certainly the ability is there, and he can do stuff that very few people around the world can. And I think when guys open up and wrestle him, when officials make guys open up and wrestle him, it's a lot of fun to watch, and the sky's the limit for him. And then Berryessa, as you mentioned, a great tournament. And then you take it one step further, a guy that wrestled in the junior tournament a year ago, Giangelo Hancock, coming off an incredible performance at the Poland Open, where he sticks four-time World Olympic champion Artur Alexanyan, wins the tournament. And so now I think the seeds have been planted. You want to see some fruit being produced at the senior level now. At the World Championships, winning a medal for the first time since 2015, what I think would be a big step for the Greco program, and seeing guys win multiple matches and put themselves in contention to get on the podium in Budapest.
Pest
is
just think Depeche Mode.
I'm going to hold out on this one. I'm digging in my heels on this one, but yeah, that's what you want to see at this point. That's the next step, I think.
Yeah, we haven't had a chance to talk much freestyle because that's going to be going after we record this. But women's freestyle, you know, Macy Kilty coming off a cadet world championship. She'll wrestle for gold later, but just her performance. And, I mean, she's really just a hammer out there.
Wow.
Yeah,
absolutely. To win a cadet world title and then in the same year jump up to juniors and do what she did yesterday.
I mean, she's not Japanese, okay? We can say this about the Japanese women all the time, but that Americans don't do this.
Yeah. A pin, two shutout techs, into the finals. She got a nice test against a Russian who was a returning champ, mm-hmm. who was a bronze medalist at Russia Senior Nationals. So that'd be a good test for her. But wow, she's been awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been Wisconsin native and training at Pinnacle in Minnesota, and there was also some work to be done with, you know, the women's program. We saw two matches in the last 2 days where athletes lost late. We had Brenda Reyna giving up a takedown with the review, literally with half a second left. Didn't throw the whizzer in time. And then Alexandra Lyles today gave up a step out with 4 seconds to go. She had had the lead. I'm circling. And then, you know, those two matches, you're out. Jaden Laurent was winning and then got pinned in the assassin. And what was going to be a very promising day for the U.S. women just came crashing down. I mean, Alicia Hawk did make the semis, you know, has a chance to wrestle for a medal, at least at some point in this tournament. But yeah, I mean, it's got to be like, yeah, okay, this could be a good day. And then how quickly international wrestling just gives you a gut check.
Yeah, and I think one of the things, one of the storylines about this team was just the lack of experience with the youth of this United States women's freestyle team, junior women's freestyle team. And I think that's probably showing up a little bit. And I think with that, with first-time experiences overseas and first-time experiences at tournaments like this, you're going to see some highs and lows. You're going to see the moment maybe or focus or lack thereof kind of come into play. And, man, there are a lot of matches in there. I can think of three or four, at least, and the ones that you just mentioned are in that that discussion, matches that you would like a do-over on, where you feel like good enough to win those matches and advance and move on and somehow let them get away. The Brenda Reyna match on the first day of competition, it felt like for about 5 minutes and 55 seconds, like she was in complete control of things, and comes out, gets two takedowns in the first minute, and then kind of stops attacking after that. Winds up giving up a takedown to go behind on criteria with about a minute to go, and then comes right back and gets a score right away. And so I think obviously the lesson there is if you can score twice in the first period, go and score three more takedowns and end the match.
Mm-hmm. One thing that also, we were actually joking that with Diamond Guilford's draw, I was like, well, you got Japan.
Yeah.
It's like you want to, okay, the old theory was, if you're going to lose early, at least lose to Japan. Well, guess what happened? That Japanese wrestler got packed in the next round, so.
Yeah, she didn't just lose to a wrestler from Japan. She lost to a U23 world
silver
champion.
Silver medalist, yeah. I think she was silver, right?
I think she's a world champion a year ago. I'm going to look it up now.
Well, as he looks it up, but yeah, what we're saying is like, that's also the depth of the women's wrestling worldwide. You're not reliant upon the, you know, okay, you assume you lose to the Japanese wrestler, you're going to get carried through. That's not necessarily a guarantee anymore. I mean, let's say, you know, losing to Slovakia, for example, that's not something you want to happen early because that's not going to carry you through. But the American fans were staying right before we left the break, all cheering for Slovakia. That match came down to a late, like she was the Slovakian wrestler to keep Fiske into the tournament, you know. Tied it up, took the lead on criteria with under a minute to go, and then, you know, gave up four late. So, as Andy basically is being diligent with his phone through the Foldeek UVV database.
I'm on track, Russ.
Oh, you're on track, see? I'm going to go do some research. We're on a race here. Da-da-da-da-da. All right, through the magic of radio editing or podcast editing, she was the champ. So,
with a tech in the finals.
Yeah. So, normally, and you're in that position, you're like, okay, I'm going to get carried through. Yeah. No guarantees anymore.
Yeah, that one was a stunner to see that result.
Now, moving over to freestyle, we've got Dayton Fix going. We got Gable Stevenson. We got a talented team. I mean, those guys are returning junior world champs off the championship team. We've had some wrestlers. That was weird. Had some wrestlers, replaced throughout. We've had some injuries. Austin Gomez has been replaced. Greg Kirkvliet was replaced. I mean, among others. So, not the same firepower, but we still got individual firepower. It's going to be fun to watch the next couple of days.
Yeah, absolutely. And it would be interesting to see to me what You know, obviously, Dayton Fix and Gable Steveson were two of the most dominant performers last year in Finland. I mean, Dayton comes out and wins 53-1 over his competition. And perhaps, like, you look at the all-time United States most dominant performances at World Championships, and Maroulas last year in Paris, Dayton's probably on that short list. And Gable as well. I mean, a guy that wasn't even technically junior eligible last year. He has to get a waiver.
Yeah, the birthday waiver.
Yeah, and
they didn't want to let him weigh in either.
Yeah, there's drama about whether they were going to let him weigh in last year in Tampa Bay, and then he goes out and blazes through the bracket, and I think it was like 61-11. His collective score there clinches the team title for the United States. And so what kind of adjustments will other wrestlers around the world make to these guys? I mean, they're probably certainly more known commodities now this time around. We saw Kamal Bey put up the most dominant performance of the Greco tournament a year ago, and then he comes out this year, and obviously guys are wrestling him a little bit different, trying to slow him down, and the Russian succeeded at that.
Yeah, so, the 2-on-1, you know, the Russian tire, as they say in Russia, the tie. I actually asked some Russian coaches last night. I run into him, one of them, which is Denis Fodov, was a Greco-Roman Olympian for Armenia, who was born in the Ukraine, wrestled for Russia, and then wrestled for Armenia. Figure that out. Yeah, he was talking, he's like, yeah, 2-on-1, you know, tie him up with it. He was basically, his English was good, too. He was talking about, you know, yeah, tie up the arm. And I was like, isn't that negative wrestling? And he just kind of grinned at me. So whether or not it was, I don't know, I don't want to say coaching tactics and are unethical when they're allowed. So, I mean, they did what they had to do to win. They did it. They beat Mahmudov the match before that, the kind of the same way. And you're not going to get called for it. Go for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No.
Wait, you're telling me you haven't. Oh, it's like, let's bring this to football for a second. The fake fair catch from, what was it, North Texas and Arkansas last week.
I missed it.
Well, yeah, because we've been over here. Well, you know, North Texas did a fake fair catch and then stood there and then ran it back for a touchdown. Now the SEC wants to say, no, there shouldn't be any more fake fair catches or something like that. Well, it's in the rule. It's still allowed. So, well, you know, do it. You know, let's bring the baseball, the hidden ball trick. You know, is it part of those unwritten rules or, you know, it's still there.
Fake the first throw to third, right?
Or just the hidden ball trick in general.
Fake third throw to first, I mean. Yeah, or the hidden ball trick.
Which you never see anymore. Unless it's like what that movie, Little Big League. Only time you see those is in movies. But anyway, again, with shutting down Bay, I mean, that was a game plan. They hit it. And then, you know, Mahmudov came up to wrestle Bay again to get his redemption. And what was really cool about that moment was the year before, Bay and Mahmudov were kind of flexing for the camera. Obviously, one's more dejected than the other. And then this year, Mahmudov basically walked over to the camera again and did the same pose last year and this year. It was a really cool moment. I mean, you got a guy from Kyrgyzstan and a guy from the United States bonding over wrestling after, you know, one threw one on its head the year before, and then, you know, Mahmudov got the better of him this time.
I think that those guys certainly appreciate each other's styles. And when you talk about negative wrestling and some of the tactics that they encounter when you run into another gunslinger that wants to go out and throw you around, I think that there's certainly the mutual appreciation for that style there.
Yeah, and I was having lunch earlier with Dustin Schlater talking about Gable, and I asked him, actually, I says, what does he need to improve on tactically? And he looked kind of like, had to think hard. He's like, well, not much. He says, the scary thing is he only started lifting weights like a year ago.
Yeah.
I mean, he goes, yeah, I mean, he's been, you know, developing good, he's, you know, he's kind of explaining, you know, he's good wrestling skills in addition to just being a tremendous athlete and, you know, just having that natural ability to be a sponge technically. And he says, now he's going to be bigger and stronger. I mean, like, that's a scary thing, especially when you look at the college season coming up and he's going to be a true freshman. It's like, you know, that's the cart right now. We've got to put the cart before the horse. This tournament here, I'm just curious on how they're going to try to slow down a guy that's 250 pounds and growing.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned, like the skill level and athleticism. It's pretty incredible just what that guy's done to this point. Three world titles already, potential to win a fourth this weekend. And I think the thing that was,
and he'll be junior eligible for, still got junior eligibility.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Yeah. And I think the thing that's really impressive about him, and it was enlightening for me, was being at the training center last year for camps in early July, and watching him go head to head with Nick Gostowski and Kyle Snyder in simulation matches and get to his offense and be competitive and be disappointed that he didn't win. I thought that was incredible. And then to do what he did in Finland last year, unbelievable. And so, man, we're in an incredible time right now, JB. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at the guys that have won at such a young age and they're stepping into college with more credentials than ever before, I think that 2020 in the Olympic trials that year and what we're going to see in freestyle, it's going to be maybe the best Olympic trials that we've ever seen.
And, and we're not trying to overstate that either, because there's so much of the recency bias and, this is the best ever. This is the best. Oh, this is the greatest.
I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, but
I mean, let's just look at the names that are going to be there that are still in their prime. Like, yikes. And we still don't have a location for that, which is we've had some off the record discussions with Rich Bender, who was here with meetings this week. So I know Wrestling Country is going to be happy wherever it ends up. So 2020 still, we've still got 2 years or a year and a half. I mean, we're, 200 days out, or less than, probably 190 days. We're 30 days from Budapest. And, I talked to Pedro Silva today, the president of the Portuguese Federation, and it's like this, especially internationally, this is it's a great time to be a wrestling fan, because 5 years of momentum from the rule change, from getting lost in the Olympic shuffle, you can say what you want about, UWW and whatever people want their motives to be or not to be. The product is improved. The exposure is improved. I mean, we saw it last year with Snyder and Sadulayev, and then Chamizo Burrows this year. And, the international community is getting into these type of things. So it's
2013 was the best thing that ever happened to the sport,
which is scary to think about. I mean, it took that. It took us to be at our worst, because the ball draw, the 1-1, the tennis, the binary code, which is the 0-1, 1-0, 1-0 matches, or, outscoring your opponent 6-2 and losing. Leg clinches, ball draws, weighted coins. The suit jackets. I mean,
so many improvements since then.
No wonder nobody liked watching wrestling then. It was horrible.
That was a really dark, dark era.
Yeah. It was like the 90s for the Yankees.
Late
80s, early 90s.
90s were good. Ended on a good note.
Yeah. As we move on, I'm trying to drive in the baseball references home. Get it? So we're struggling on fantasy football. Andy's got some heated words for the Schwab brothers and their league, which we cannot repeat. But one thing, let's kind of dial it.
They're
back.
Fighting for table scraps right now.
Who's winning, Big Brother or Little Brother?
Little Brother.
Wonder why. Shots fired. So one thing that's about these international trips is the time difference. And what I always struggle with on trips is maintaining some idea of what the heck's going on.
Yeah.
In the U.S. and with professional sports, like Fargo is usually a time suck, and I'm in the same time zones. Overseas, I mean, you got to set your fantasy football lineup. So woe is me, first world problems. But how hard is it to try to keep up with what's going on outside of we're in an arena for 7 days.
Yeah, I just found out today that North Texas put 44 on the board against Arkansas.
Did you just look that up?
No, I was actually listening to a podcast earlier today, and I was like, what? But
Troy beat Nebraska.
I saw that. It's like really weird for me, because back home I usually don't go to bed until the last West Coast baseball game is over. I'm usually watching all of them. And then now I'm waking up in the morning and So, or going to bed at night, some games haven't even started for that day. So, that's a little bit of an adjustment.
Yeah.
And, figuring out when you can place phone calls back home. My girlfriend's a teacher, kindergarten teacher. And so, trying to find the time each day to at least call and say hello. It's been a little bit of a challenge because, I'm usually in the arena when she's getting up going to school each morning. And then by the time she's done, it's about time for me to go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a little strange. I mean, you feel like you have no clue what's going on back in the States for the most part, but, these have been fun trips. It's been fun to get out and see the world.
Yeah. Right now, as we record this, 3:34 local time, 8:34 AM in Minneapolis. My wife just put Lucy on the bus and has dropped off Ruby at school. So, and she's on her way to work. So right now it's like our day's almost done and, you know, broadcast day is going to begin here soon, but yeah, day's just beginning, you know, and trying to pick up free agents on, Rich Bender was complaining about he was mad at us because he was 1 minute late at picking up a free agent for his fantasy football team. Blamed us for it all.
It was Andrew Berryessa's fault,
yeah.
Actually. He was winning in the quarterfinals in a tight match, right? And that, you know, we got distracted because of that, and then we didn't do our job, which was remind Rich it's time to go in and pick up some free agents.
Yeah, like at 3:01 or 2:01 local time or whatever it was.
So who was it he lost? Do you remember?
Wide
out.
Yeah, he was talking about dropping Brandon Marshall or something. Like, I don't know when it was, but I don't know. I had a bad week in fantasy football anyway, but moving forward to what you've been doing here with track wrestling, which is, you know, your primary role, you know, there's an agreement with track wrestling for streaming world championships. So you get to sit over with us as I'm also contracted here for United World Wrestling to do the broadcast, which you can see in the U.S. on track wrestling next to Eric Olenowski, who wrestles at Michigan State, who's part of their content team, and then the Brits. So we got an interesting crew on our side of the arena.
We do. It's a fun group, though. It's a great group. The Brits keep it light. They keep it entertaining.
And we all try British accents. It just never works.
Yeah, yeah. I don't really try all that much, but...
try harder.
But anyway, yeah, it's been fun. I mean, I think I spent more time with them than I did my own family after like August 1st of last year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were together for, I think, like 47 days or something like that at four different world championship tournaments, Finland, France, Greece, and Poland. And so some interesting stories through those times.
Together. Thanksgiving in Poland.
Thanksgiving in Poland, eating turkey jerky with Matt and Rachel Waters. That was our Thanksgiving turkey. He was eating it out of a bag.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, at least you were with Iowans.
Yep, Iowans, indeed. Megan Black on that trip as well. I don't know where we're going, JB.
I was just saying, if we're going to spend Independence Day with the Brits, that'd be something else.
We almost did.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah, for Cadet Worlds. But
now, with track wrestling and stuff, I mean, what type of content have you been churning out here?
So, photos, daily or, like, updates throughout the rounds as they go, not quite real time, but pretty close to real time. Video interviews as well. Going to try to get some more in-depth video interviews throughout the next couple, 3 days. Going to write some takeaways as well. Just some general thoughts from each tournament as it wraps up. And there's no shortage of things to do. It's more of a shortage of time to do it in. It's been fun, like with the photography end of it, trying to learn that. And, you know, over in Poland last year, the arena was great for it. It was perfect for my basic camera,
mm-hmm.
where the lighting was really good and the backgrounds were good. And, you know, photos turned out pretty well. Over here, it's been a little darker. The backdrops have not been as good. And so the photos have been grainy. They've been. It's been a little bit more of a challenge. I think I need to upgrade my equipment maybe a little bit, but
careful though, because gas actually impacts everybody. Gear acquisition syndrome. talked to Tony Rotundo about that last week.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's not cheap to take the next step and go from where I'm at now to the next level. But I have gained a greater appreciation for the guys like Tony Rotundo, John Sachs, the best photographers in the United States and around the world as far as wrestling is concerned, for doing what they do. Because they crank out great stuff time after time after time.
Moving forward here on this special On the Mat from Trnava, Slovakia. That's Trnava. It is we're about 45 minutes northeast of the capital of Bratislava. We've had no shortage of Eurotrip references on this. Scotty does not know. He doesn't know what happens on one Sunday, but we'll be wrapping things up here in a bit. Andy, any thoughts that we want to just interject here before we go? Again, no guests today here on the show. It's just you and me waxing poetic in a hotel room at the Holiday Inn.
No PDI.
Yeah, no
differential index.
I love that, by the way. Yeah, I know I've had no input on how that has been constructed, but as a wrestling guy, I love that construct. So keep going with that.
We will. We're obsessed with it. So one of the highlights of the week is just crunching the numbers, seeing what they look like and what we learned from it. This is something that Kyle and I have been talking about for years, though. I mean, we've talked about how dual scoring is so antiquated, mm-hmm. and there has to be something better than what we're doing right now. And we've talked about this in recent episodes, but the one that really drove it home for me was this year's Penn State-Ohio State duel, and nobody knows going into the final match how many points Kyle Snyder has to win by for Ohio State to win the duel on criteria. And, you know, it's not good. That's not good for the sport when, you know, people are watching it and they don't understand who's winning or who needs to do what to win. And then also from an action standpoint, I just think that if you're up 4-1, there's inside a minute to go, you're probably not going to take a lot of risk. And if we can get to the point where there's incentive every second of the match for guys to score, I think that's, you know, we're going to see a much, much better college product. One thing that we talked about, the changes in an international freestyle, and I think that they struck the right chord with the rule set now. And I was not a criteria fan in the beginning. I don't know about you.
I'm still, there's still something about the finality of sudden victory. Like, you know, Brandon Slay beating Satiev in sudden victory in the Olympics. Like that moment's over. But to your point,
I think that I totally get that. And I'm with you on that point, but I will trade 6 minutes of great action for that one moment that might show up every 25 matches. I think that we're at a point now with the best wrestling to me occurs when one guy's behind and has to score. You know, whether that's in the final 30 seconds of the college season, or whether that's with 3-4 minutes to go in international freestyle, I think that to me is when the best wrestling action occurs. And now we get to see it throughout matches because of the rule set and how for 4.5 minutes, 4 minutes, somebody is always behind. And I like that. I like the fact that the 10-point tech is attainable enough that there's incentive. If you're up by six, go get two more scores and just end it. If you're down eight, you've still got a shot. You know, you get on top, you hook up a trap arm gut, you get a leg lace, whatever it may be, you can rack up points in a hurry. We saw it, you know, off the top of my head, I think of Pico and Ness in the Olympic trials. That was one.
Like 9-0, wasn't it?
Yeah. Teetering on the verge of getting teched out of the championship bracket right away, and then Pico comes back and puts 20 on the board.
Yeah, 20-10, teched all the other way.
You know, McDonough and Hutter up at the...
Don't remind me of
the
that.
The World
one.
Team Trials.
You son of a...
In Madison.
Gotta throw my boy under the bus.
Down, what, 8-0, I think?
Down 8-0.
It ends up being 16-8, maybe. Yeah. And, you know, there are several more that...
all the matches you pull out freaking McDonough and Hutter. I'm sorry, Kyle.
but anyway, My apologies, Kyle.
We're never doing this again.
But I think that that creates a, you know, a really, I think it creates a great dynamic. And I think entertainment level's at an all-time high right now for freestyle wrestling. There's not a whole lot that I would change with the way the rule set is constructed right now.
Greco has tried to make improvements. They still got to figure out what it is, because sometimes you've got Kamal Bey out there, Mahmudov, and Kairov from Kyrgyzstan throwing people. Then sometimes you've got Sherwin Williams versus Miracle-Gro out there. I mean, we've got grass growing, meat and paint drying sometimes.
It's an improvement over last year, no doubt.
We're seeing technical points being scored. We're seeing fewer. We did see several 1-1 passives. The referee has to make the call. You know, referees I was talking to, they don't want to. Danny Blackshear goes, I'm calling a passivity in a scoreless match at a minute and 30 in. So halfway through the period, if there's no scoring, I'm going to call a passivity then and there. Because they're also required, they can only put the athlete down twice a match. And you have to, you know, that's at most. You can't put a guy down three times in a match.
Yeah.
So
I think Paris last year for Greco is probably where freestyle was 2005 to 2012. It was just, it was becoming like the ball drop, basically. Mm-hmm. And we see a little bit of that still, maybe, where we're seeing matches that it's just become a tactical battle. You don't want to get the first passivity because you want the second one.
Mm-hmm.
And that definitely needs to be eradicated. Some way that officials are not determining matches, because officials don't want to determine matches. And
contrary to popular belief.
Yeah, and athletes don't want officials determining matches. So let's figure out a way that that's not an issue.
I think Eric actually brought up an interesting point, and we interviewed him for a short time earlier in the week. And it's maybe sometimes our perspective as Americans that there's this lack of trusting with any international federations. I think FIFA is probably the biggest culprit worldwide. And of course, some of the countries in their anti-doping, one specific entity at large, is that the word, you know, Eric's like said, you know, we're quick to throw the word corruption around when there's a bad call or something. Whereas if there's a bad call at the NCAAs, is anybody screaming that the officials are corrupt?
No.
I mean, they might say that they're biased, but they're not saying corrupt. I mean, it's kind of weird. I never thought about it that way. We'll be quick to throw around corruption, probably because there's a track record of it. But, you know, now, I mean, I know a lot of these officials over the, you know, we've seen a lot of them on trips. And when you see some of them out there, you know, that guy's not trying to screw over this guy. He's not trying to lose his upgrade. So sometimes let's not confuse a bad call with corruption when it could be just, could be ineptitude. It could be misapplication. It could be human error. So
it happens. I mean, I'm, you know, taking it back to baseball. I mean, we watch, like I watch, I don't know, 300 plus big league games a year, maybe 500. And by and large, umpires do a great job. And we see stuff that gets overturned now and replayed, but it amazes me how many bang bang calls that they get right. And yet, they'll miss some.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we look at Armando Galarraga, and I'm blanking on the name of the umpire who missed the call at first base, a simple call at first base that cost him a perfect game. This has been like 5 years ago, and you know, obviously he wanted to get the call right, and he's devastated by it because that's the call that he lives with now. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the call that's attached to his name.
Who's the first base umpire? And what was it? That's the
Don Dankinger, 1985.
Your Cardinals, Royals,
Waterloo, Iowa.
So you see, I even said, who is that? You knew exactly who I was talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't want your name tied to that forever. You don't want that call defining your career. And so they're out there trying to get it right. And sometimes you just miss it.
I mean, let's kind of bring up our own example. Like, you know, one referee in wrestling's name became a verb, you know, for a time there after 2006. So, I mean, we see it in our sport as well. And was anybody calling Gary corrupt? No.
No.
He's had a bad match. It happens. Yeah, but great officials have bad, you know, Kamal Bey is a great wrestler, had a bad day.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not trying to be an apologist for officials or UWW or anything. I'm just kind of presenting the other perspective. So we can go down this rabbit hole for a while, but rather not follow the white rabbit. What do we got coming up on Track Wrestling? We finished this series of international stars. Now we got 30 days of American athletes. You know, how's that? What's that been like to put together?
It's been fun. It's been enlightening. It's been biting off maybe about as much as I can chew, because at first it was going to be a project where I thought it was just going to take 10 minutes. And then it became a lot more than that, because I decided to write 5 or 6 paragraphs about all of them. But to rewind and explain the 100-day countdown and where it started, basically, we had all this content from the past year of all these matches of world championships, and, you know, just thinking about, we probably had close to 20 matches of Gino Petrushvili last year. Mm. When you look at, I think the World Cup, senior U23s, junior U23s, Euro U23s, and then senior Euros. And we had all of them, but we didn't have them in one spot. And so it was like, how can we put these all in one spot? And so that was, all right, we're going to create some profiles for these international stars. And also, and one of my biggest complaints with watching world championships maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago was not knowing the credentials of the wrestlers. I remember just like, you know, I was still in Iowa City and, or still in Des Moines covering Brent Metcalf's world championships. And it would become like a scavenger hunt trying to find, you know, he wins a match in the world championships. All right, who's he got next? And what has this guy accomplished? And that became a little bit of, like I said, a little bit of a scavenger hunt, kind of difficult to find some of this stuff. And I always thought, like, if we can find a way to put in the brackets, a link to their bios, mm-hmm. where you click on them, you see what they're, you know, who they've beaten, who they've lost to, what they've accomplished in past world championships, what they've, you know, their age, if possible. So we went out and kind of just built those, and you'll see them in the brackets. Now, if you go back to Paris 2017 or even Budapest this year, there will be 100 names in the brackets at least that, or thereabouts that have, you know, the blue underline. You can click on it, go to their bio, watch their, you know, some of their matches, see what they've accomplished. If we've written stories about them or done video interviews on them, they will be on the page as well. And then the other benefit too, or a couple other benefits too, it's put Budapest in people's minds for 100 days. And it's also given us 100 days worth of content. So it's become a project that's probably taken, I don't know, 20 times longer per day than what I thought it would. And sometimes, you know, I'll just spend a day cranking out 6 or 7 of those or more, trying to get ahead. But it's been educational for me to, there've been a lot of international wrestlers that I have learned about, I've known their names and known some of their accomplishments, but going back and digging into their stories a little bit more. I mean, Petrushvili even. The guy that kind of sparked this project. No, he was kidnapped when he was younger.
Hmm.
He was kidnapped for like several months. And really fascinating story there. The heavyweight world champ, at, you know, when he was a young boy, had been kidnapped. And he still deals apparently with some health issues because of malnutrition at that age while he was kidnapped.
Wow, that's crazy. One thing that you did the profile on Nestor Tafur, who wrestled at Boston University. He was an assistant at F&M for a bit. And the story, I first look at it and it's like, whoa, what? His name's with 2 F's. Well, you got some backstory on why his name's now with 1 F. I mean, that was, yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah. When his grandfather immigrated over here, and his grandfather and grandmother are from Barranquilla, Colombia. Excuse me if I'm mispronouncing it.
Well, you've mispronounced Budapest, so I don't blame you for missing that.
All right. Good point. I'm not going to apologize for that. But anyway, they're from the same Colombian coastal city, and they wind up both immigrating to the United States and meeting in Jersey. And that's how grandparents met. When his grandfather immigrated over here, Nestor explained that he had a little bit, his cursive was sloppy, and one F on his documents made it look like two. And so that's stuck over here. And yet the family back there in Columbia spells it with one F. And so that's what they've gone by on UWW registration this, since he started competing again. And there's also the story about how he started competing on the international circuit, where he was at Franklin and Marshall, assistant coach. You know, he can't remember what the deal exactly was, but he made a deal with the guys on his team that if they did something, he was going to go compete again at the Nittany Lion Open. So he went and wrestled in that, won the tournament, decided, you know, I'm going to go compete at the Midlands and perform really well at the Midlands. And suddenly he's back in it. I'm going to start competing internationally. And now he's competing for Columbia. But wouldn't you know it, this year at the Central American Games, back in the hometown where both of his grandparents were born and raised, he had 25 family members there. So that to me was a pretty cool story that's come out of this series. And Stevan Micic as well. I'm going to be writing a little bit more about his story and what his grandparents went through, what his grandfather went through. It's an incredible story of his life. And his grandfather also named Stevan, and it's carrying on his family's heritage is a big reason why he opted to compete for Serbia instead of the United States. And he will be trying to win the first world medal for Serbia at the World Championships this year.
Like, as you said in the story, he's been rewriting the Serbian record books every time he steps on the mat, it seems.
Yeah, yeah. First Euro medalist.
David Habit doing the same thing for Slovenia, yep, out of the same wrestling room.
Yep. Yeah, they're kind of like the UN of wrestling rooms there, right? I mean, they've got...
We got Lebanon, got Slovenia, Serbia. I think one of them, I think the Amines are going to try to wrestle for San Marino.
Yeah.
I mean, yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's that whole chamizo argument into another level too? But Andy, I think that's a good place to wrap it up, as we've got to get over to the session here in a bit. That will do it for this episode of On the Mat. Just remind us, keep your focus, keep your strength, keep your energy. Each and every episode here from, I guess, the remote office of the Dan Gable Museum in beautiful Waterloo, Iowa. Get some single speeds, Gable's Munich gold, and good to go.
Sounds good.
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
For more wrestling podcasts, head over to matttalkonline.com.